It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday the 19th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Yahoo had an earnings call yesterday. As a company up for sale, it might have been its last. Yahoo's revenue was up, but overall it missed expectations. At this point, though, the numbers people were looking for had very little to do with the company's performance this quarter. Here's Brian Weiser, senior analyst at Pivotal Research Group.
The core details of what they're doing with search or display advertising really don't matter at this point.
What does matter? Who's buying the whole kit and caboodle, if anyone? Yesterday was also the deadline for final bids. Many estimates value Yahoo's core internet business at around $4 billion. Next question is whether the board will accept any of the cash companies are putting on the table. A much newer tech company, Netflix, also reported earnings yesterday. It was hoping to boast over 2.5 million new subscribers worldwide. It added about 1.7 instead. The company stock dropped big time in after-hours trading. There's a lot going on in the city of Cleveland, Ohio right now. Republicans are trying to get some sense of unity as a party as their national convention ramps up around a ticket with Donald Trump and Indiana Governor Mike Pence. It is by many measures a bit unorthodox. You would be hard-pressed to turn on network television and not find the U.S. news focused on the Buckeye State. But new research out from Pew this week suggests that whether we're talking about voters or candidates, the news about the race isn't being searched out or delivered in the same way it was just 4 years ago. Katarina Eva Matza is senior researcher at Pew. Katarina, thanks for chatting.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pretty common saying in the tech world, meet the audience where they already are, right? And it seems like this is happening a little bit in the world of politics as well.
Yeah, one of the things that we saw in this study is that basically, you know, already in 2012, we've seen this shift towards social media where the candidates are putting a lot of content out in different kinds of format. You know, for example, Donald Trump retweets and an overwhelming majority of his retweets are from the public. So there are differences. We're also seeing differences from 2012, you know, on how they're using their websites.
To a certain degree, they're shifting away from their websites in terms of a lot of the stuff that they're putting out there, right?
Exactly. What we found, their news websites are leaner and less interactive from 2012.
So you also looked at what candidates linked to on their websites and social media, whether they did link to actual journalism or content produced by the campaigns themselves, what you call original content. And you found that Hillary Clinton mostly links to her own campaign's materials?
Yes. And what we saw is that she predominantly has original content. On the other hand, Donald Trump is linking more to his to respective news organizations' content and other clips.
So information about Hillary's campaign via Hillary's campaign, while Trump loves to throw out lots of links. Pew's Katarina Eva Matza, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Speaking of social media channels and the campaigns, Hillary Clinton's camp has set up, wait for it, negative Snapchat filters for the convention in Cleveland. Filters pop up when you post photos or videos from certain locations. For example, one puts yellow police tape across your Cleveland image that has the words "Stop Trump" on the police tape. Another has a sick burn from one of Trump's former competitors in the GOP race, Ohio Governor John Kasich. You can hear Marketplace's convention coverage on our new pop-up podcast, by the way. It's called Politics Inside Out, where we explore the gap between insiders and outsiders in our politics and our economy. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or go to marketplace.org/insideout. In the wake of events like the attacks in Nice, France, and the shooting in Baton Rouge, Louisiana over the weekend, some ask whether technology can be used to stem the violence. The answer to these events is usually political, not technological, but there are a growing number of non-lethal military and domestic law enforcement tools designed to help reduce death. Tech editor for the security publication Defense One, Patrick Tucker, has been covering this. Patrick, Can you talk about some of the non-lethal tools available in terrorist attacks?
One of the more interesting ones is called a plasma gun. Basically, it creates a small ball of plasma, plasma being the fourth state of matter, at a certain range in the distance. And you can use directed energy to shape them in such a way that they create noise. So it's sort of like you can create very specific, very loud noise at a very particular spot. So theoretically, you could put that noise directly into the cab of a truck if somebody was launching like a truck attack. It's really difficult to do.
And there's another one that's like an electromagnetic pulse, right?
Right. There's a couple of different ways to send a lot of electricity into a car. And today's cars have often more than 100 microprocessors in them. So if you can get them all to send a lot of electricity into those microprocessors, you can stall out the car.
Are some of these tools usable not just to stop terrorist attacks, but also to stop shootings of police officers, like those shootings that took place in Baton Rouge over the weekend?
Theoretically, they can all be used, but that doesn't mean they're all going to be used as easily or as readily as they might be by U.S. military personnel. You know, in these situations, police are obviously cleared to use lethal force, except that's sort of straightforward. There's a lot of legal precedent for that. And everything that we're talking about here, that's entirely new.
Are we putting too much pressure on our security officers by expecting them to have just the right non-lethal tool?
So this is, you know, sort of the weird irony of this moment in time. We have all of these different non-lethal tools that might be usable in a civilian situation, but we're not sure of the legality of them. At the same time, we are pretty sure about the legality of or what happens when a very well-armed police officer encounters a very well-armed civilian, and the thing that they're going to have an argument about is whether or not somebody's going to jail for like a broken taillight. So what I'm encouraged by is the idea that you can actually decrease or de-escalate a lot of those situations through the application of technology. That doesn't mean that we have figured out how to do that yet.
Patrick Tucker, he is technology editor with Defense One. Patrick, thank you very much for talking to me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You can find more information via Patrick's piece. We posted it at facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.